The older I get, the more I want to know that the resurrection is real. I realize that this may sound odd coming from a minister, especially a minister on Easter Sunday, but what are the odds? It's either true or it's not. 50-50. As a friend of mine once said to me when we were contemplating this question of what happens to us after we die and the dilemma of is it real or is it not, he said, well, one thing's for sure, Stephen, when we die, one of us is going to be massively surprised. And since that is a truism, and since we did not see Jesus after he was resurrected the way the first disciples or Mary did, how do we know that the resurrection is real? And if it is, what are the signs of it that are there today that we might look at too, so that we might know that Jesus is with us? You see, the human will to live has always amazed me. Because when I look at some of life's conditions, I think to myself, would I want to continue on if I was born into that set of circumstances? But, you know, no matter how bad life can get, most of us will fight to our final breath to see how it all plays out. 10 years ago, I had the privilege of teaching Presbyterian students at Union Seminary Presbyterian Polity, basically about our government, our form of government in our denomination, which blows my mind because it's been a decade ago and it feels like it was just yesterday. And the reason I want to share these stories that I came across, I had filed them away with you today, is because I believe we need to hear stories as real as the story that we are celebrating today out of John's Gospel. We need to hear the stories of eyewitnesses to the events that gather us here today to know that these resurrection appearances continue, that life out of death continues. We need to hear these stories because they share the same quality that the first disciples shared with us, that while something terrible had happened, something even more amazing and miraculous had taken place 3 days later, which replaced, for the very first time in human history, something that had never occurred before. That is, somebody coming back from the dead to life. And the reason I like hearing these stories is because they remind me that while the world can often dehumanize us, the world can shame us, the world can label us, the world can stigmatize us, and the world even can ultimately destroy us, there are stories out there, stories no less miraculous than the resurrection story we celebrate today. I remember one of my students, in fact, sharing with me one of the things that she was doing with her young folks. She did a study in New York while she had been ministering to teenagers. And she said, you know, I don't know if you know this, but one out of every four teenagers has not only contemplated suicide, but has worked out a plan to do it. That's a pretty staggering statistic. I said, that surprises me because the years that I spent as a kid in my memory were some of the happiest times of my life growing up in Jacksonville, Illinois, and Crosby, Minnesota. And at that, my class almost in unison said, oh, no, Steve. They were the worst years of our lives. And when I think back on it, it depends on when you put that period at what point of your childhood, because that's true. When I think back to my high school years, for example, they were probably some of the worst, most painful times in my life. I was gawky. I was geeky. I was thin beyond description. I looked funny. I didn't sound well. I mean, I squeaked when I talked. I was a mess. So I asked my students, what made you choose life? Why did you stick it out over death? What kept you alive? And these are their resurrection stories. This is a gospel according to John, not John, but my John. My life he spent was spent as a foster child, living from one house to the next. The worst thing about being a foster child in a home with other children is the unspoken but ever-present reminder that you are not quite equal with others in that house. You know that they'll stay and that you'll go sometime. You learn at a very early age not to become too attached to people because nothing that might be considered family will ever last. And so you keep your distance so that you don't get hurt and you keep love at bay. And while the loneliness becomes unbearable and death doesn't look so bad, you begin to think at least it will end the pain, he said. So I asked him, well, what kept you alive? What kept you going? What kept you from checking out? And he said two things. If you're really young, cover your ears, parents, over your kids' ears. But this is a true story, so I have to tell it. Marijuana, he said. Marijuana and guys who hung out smoking it with me. That was the first thing he said that kept me alive. Really? I said, marijuana kept you alive? I asked him. Yeah, he said, because it helped ease the pain. And I had a group of people who accepted me that I could hang out with. And I said, well, that's amazing to me that it was marijuana and a group of street kids that gave you the will to live. Yeah, but as I got older, when there were no more foster homes to go to, I had to go live with my grandmother in Jamaica. I hope that grandmother was a lot like Meryl. And he said with a smile and a laugh in his voice, she was very religious, my grandmother. She was a very old black woman who used to pray very loudly outside so that everybody in the neighborhood could hear her prayer. And her prayer went like this. Please, God, keep John from smoking ganja. And she would pray this prayer over and over and over throughout the neighborhoods so that everybody could hear it. It was so embarrassing to me. And then one day, I went up the hill to hang out with my friends, and for some reason, I knew this would be my last day smoking ganja. Just like that, I asked. Just like that. Yeah. There was just this overwhelming feeling that this was not what I wanted to continue to do, that there had to be more to life than deadness. You know, as I'm saying this, all I can think is that there have been, as I'm saying this, all I can think is that there must have been that old woman's prayers, those constant prayers for me. If it had not been for her, I don't think I would have cleaned up my act. I wouldn't have gone to college. I wouldn't have married the woman that's sitting here today. And I wouldn't be in this seminary of all places. And then I asked Maggie, what was it that kept you alive? And this is her gospel story. She said, I came to the United States from islands in the South when I was 9. And it was an awful time because I really wasn't accepted by the African-American community or by the white community. I was in no man's land when I got here. I was an introvert too, which made it even harder on me. And the only person I really felt close to was my sister, but here in the States, because she was 3 years older than I was, we never went to school at the same time except when we were in elementary school. So I didn't really ever have any close friends growing up, people that I could lean on and talk with. So what kept you alive? I asked. What kept you going? And she said it was music, and two hymns in particular that kept her going. She used to sing them every day throughout the day. She says, I still sing them. So it was music that kept you going, I said. Yeah, and those two hymns in particular. In fact, every Sunday, I would sing them with my sister on the way to church. And I was so stubborn, and I was so determined to go to Harvard and to show everybody in my neighborhood that I was just as good, if not better than them, that I shut out everything except those hymns. And I graduated from Harvard with an A average. And here I am today working on my PhD. Today, she is the associate professor down at a southern seminary in this country. And finally, I heard the gospel according to Becky. She said, I was an actress for many, many years. And my story has so many twists and so many turns, I don't really know where to begin. I've tried and failed at suicide, tried and failed at marriage twice, by men who abused me. And I guess the only thing that I ever did right before this point in my life was give birth to my daughter. So I asked her, well, what was it that kept you going and thinking that life might be worth living? And she said, well, about 7 years ago, I was in Europe with a group of actors doing plays and traveling, and I was pretty unhappy. So one day, while they all decided to go off and sightsee in a village, and they didn't ask me to go along, which was fine, because I really didn't want to go with them anyway, because they didn't really like me and I didn't really like them. And I had been drinking pretty heavily, too, in those days, which may be one of the reasons why I wasn't liked and I wasn't too happy. Well, since there wasn't that much to do except go and see cathedrals, that's what I went and did, she said. And I found myself sitting alone in this big cathedral when I came to this sudden realization that I didn't want to live like I was living anymore. I didn't want to feel the way I felt dead inside anymore. So later, I started attending AA meetings. And I got my act together, as they say. And I've been sober now for 7 years. And here I am with all of you in class. So I guess there was something about being in that cathedral that made you want to live. Those 2 hours in class went by that day in seminary pretty fast. As we came to an end, it occurred to me that every resurrection story I heard that day had something to do with being part of the body of Christ. It had to do with the power of prayer. It had to do with the power of music. It had to do with the power of a physical structure such as a church. I don't believe in coincidences. I never have. And I don't really believe in luck either. What I believe in is God's providence. I believe in God. And these stories were told to me during Holy Week 10 years ago, too soon at the time to use in Easter services then. But they all had that common theme, and they were all connected to the church in one way or another. It makes sense to me, because this is the church's greatest single story. It's the reason you're all here today. In all of its various forms, the gospel accounts of the resurrection are validated for me because they continue to be told in the gospel stories of our own lives. This little smiley pin on my lapel here, I put on a little over a month ago at the funeral for Claire Mason. And Steve Shaw put this pin on me, her son, and I had forgotten it was there this Sunday when I came out to preach until I looked down and saw it smiling at me, and it reminded me of Claire. Just one more sign for me, one more memento that what was once told so long ago continues to be told today, and that it's really for us to open our eyes and to seek after God until God catches us. And until that time, let us continue to hope and pray that every experience that comes your way is an opportunity for you to meet with the living God who raises death in all of its various forms into new life. Happy Easter. Amen.